Yes to Life show. My name's Robin Daly, and I'm your regular host for the show, in which I talk to people about cancer. Scientists, researchers, doctors, authors, and of course people who've had cancer or still have cancer, and as a result have things to share with us. But I'm always looking for what's working for people and why that might be. This week's show is a little different. I've brought my recording equipment along to a Yes to Life event in deepest Sussex to capture something of the day. It's called Seeds of Change, and it's being hosted by linseed guru Derwin Banks at his farm near Horsham. Derwin's passionate about all things to do with natural health, particularly high quality fats and oils. And he's a great supporter of Yes to Life. So, hi again, Derwin. It's great to be back at your farm here. Thanks very much for hosting this event today. Just start off by telling us a little bit about the day, what we're going to expect today, and what your hopes are for the day.
Okay, well, my hopes are really high, but the running order of the day will be Yvette Jordan will be on first, and she's going to be talking about lymphatic pressure drainage. As you know, the lymph system is one of our first lines of defence, and is often compromised in a big way, especially when women have breast cancer operations and things like that, and they can end up with fat arms and so on. And Yvette is very keen. Yes, Yvette is very keen on helping people understand that you don't have to go through that, and some pressure therapy can prevent it. But then I'm going to do a little bit about linseed. I'll take everybody around and they can come and see how the linseed is produced in the barn and so on, and put their hands in the seed and get some seed therapy. And of course, the reason we're here is largely because linseed is used as part of the Budvig protocol in helping support people with cancer.
Right, so this is one of your passions, and it is, you know, the good quality fats and oils.
It's about freshness, we're about freshness. Whatever we do, whether it's the linseed oil or the linseed meal, is delivered to people within a few days of it being processed. And of course, you can't really get anything like that in a store, and you only have to go and look on them, and then you'll find that they have a very long shelf life. We don't think that's quite right.
They've got things in them to create that shelf life.
Possibly they may have things like the oil, they say, is flushed with nitrogen, so that there's no air getting to it in the top, but I don't know how effective that is, but often the oils certainly don't taste very nice.
Right, okay, and then what's after that?
So then we're going to have lunch, and we're going to obviously have a lot of linseed inspired products with some linseed mayonnaise, both vegetarian and ordinary, and linseed vinaigrette. So you'll be surprised about that, no doubt. And after lunch, Pete Cohen is going to be talking about his journey. He's a very inspiring life coach, and his lady Hannah had a cancer in the brain and went to see Dr. Brzezinski in America. He's another man that's just vilified out of all proportion, but he does seem to achieve results, and now married and very happy. So we're looking forward to hearing what he has to say.
Alright, so that's great. So just maybe you'd like to tell us a little bit about how you got into this whole area, because you've got a long farming background and everything, but this is really must be something quite different for you to have moved into this whole area, which is so involved with health directly.
Yes, it certainly is. I suppose right very at the very beginning, most of our young lives on a small family farm, we were really quite poor, there's no other way of saying it, and very hardworking. So I was always thinking of make a million ideas, and of all the ideas that I've had, eventually one led to me pressing linseed oil. And the reason I knew a little bit about it is because you feed your animals, or we always used to feed our animals, the byproduct of pressing oil, which is linseed oil cake. And when you did that, they had lovely, healthy coats, their coats shone.
They look good.
And they look good. And of course, it improved the fatty acid balance of the animal. Mm. So you had animals that were grazing in those days, and largely over animals unimproved, although they weren't pastures like today necessarily, so they were making omega-3 in their body, and you were fattening them up with something that was added to that. And today, so often animals are fattened up in feedlots and with byproducts of soya and corn and rape oil, and that changes the balance of the fats in the animal's body. So there's lots of things we need to do, and we need to think about it pretty early on.
Well, that's applied to animals, but of course you're now very concerned with the issues around human health and where we've got to with our processed fats and what's actually happening to human health as a result.
Yeah, so that's how I started doing it, and I was knocking on people's door who had a sable and saying, would you like to buy some oil for your animals? But I soon was able to learn things about oil on the internet, and one of the first people I came across was Joanna Budvig and her protocol. And I think she was amazing in the early 50s, just started to look at essential fats and the cell membranes and what's going on there. And of course, as you know, she eventually went on to develop a protocol to help people, support people with cancer.
Yes.
But what she was really doing is investigating a totally new area that hadn't been much investigation done at that time. And of course came up with the theory that if you feed yourself properly, we probably won't have any of these difficulties, or so many of these difficulties. So as a consequence of that, she had an extremely hard life and lost jobs at universities, and was even prosecuted, I think, a number of times in Germany. But they never succeeded in convicting her, so I was able to use what she had to say and learn about it and pass that kind of message on. So it's been an amazing journey.
Yeah. So many of your customers, people who have cancer, do you think that?
I'm sure they are. Well, my sister died with breast cancer, right, which gives me a bit of an added impetus. But I began to discover, more people would ring up and say they want to do the Budvig protocol. So I learned more about how people felt and how they were treated, in the conventional system. And quite often I think that's not very good.
Well, that's we're certainly looking for improvements in the way that people with cancer are treated. There's plenty of room for it. Many thanks. Maybe we'll check in again at the end of the day. So one of the speakers today is Yvette Jordan. She is a woman on a mission. She's founding the UK Lymphology Clinics around Britain. And I just want to hear you tell us exactly what you're trying to do, why you're trying to do it, what need you're trying to fulfill.
Yes, what we're trying to do is we're trying to bring proactive preventative healthcare into the public domain so that it's actually accessible on an easily accessible, should I say, with trained therapists. We're trying to train massage therapists, nurses, therapists, complementary therapists who want to look after cancer patients, who want to start to do a new therapy called lymphatic pressure therapy. And the mission is to, these therapists are then going to be available through their own practices, and patients can have access to those therapists in the area.
Okay, so tell us a bit about why this therapy is important.
This therapy is important because actually at the moment there is no therapy.
Okay.
And there is no aftercare for patients. At the moment we're concentrating on breast cancer lymphedema prevention, and it's for looking after patients that have gone through breast cancer on the road to recovery. Lymphatic pressure therapy is five elements of recovery. We look at posture and gait, we look at range of motion, we look at reconnecting the muscles, and we look at implement the lymphatic pressure massage, and then you have specific lymph pumping massage pumping exercises to do on a daily basis at home. So you can really work the whole shoulder to help prevent the lymphedema rather than just a massage therapy. It's much more than that.
Okay, so let's say a little bit about lymphedema for the listeners who don't know what lymphedema is.
Lymphedema is a condition that is slow, progressive onset condition, and it starts maybe as a pain, your rings are swollen. Once you've had breast cancer or you've had interference with the lymphatic system, because the muscles aren't working, because the muscles are not pumping the lymphatic system, the actual system starts to build up, it backlogs into the hand and then eventually into the arm. It feels heavy, uncomfortable. But lymphedema doesn't have to be massive. It can actually be as debilitating as a pain in the hand and the arm. You know, lymphedema starts very slowly and is reversible in the early stages.
So that's important, isn't it? Because it's, in many people's mind, it kind of goes with the territory of having surgery for breast cancer. Yeah, you're going to get problems with that. Yeah. So you're saying that actually it doesn't have to be a problem?
No, it doesn't have to be a problem at all. The trouble is that because there is no preventative approach, there is no awareness of the early signs and warning signs, what happens is people wait until, you know, the arm is swollen and it's too late then. You have to get it really early. You have to start the actual muscles working and pumping. And there is no acknowledgement of any signs of this within the medical profession because they don't do preventative approach for lymphedema. They wait until you've got a arm, and it has to be 37.5% bigger before they'll actually do anything.
Okay, well, that's important. So people have got to be well informed to actually know what to look for. Yeah. So you've got an educational job on your hands. That's part of it, really.
Yes, absolutely.
But interesting. But this is, in a way, the thing about this is as it's a result of an intervention in this case, it's like, well, you can know, you're quite likely to expect it. So if people are wised up to the fact that it goes with the territory, but there are preventative measures, then at least, you know, okay, I've had surgery, what am I going to do about it? It's not like a condition that comes out of the blue, is what I'm saying. It's actually a result of something that you know has happened.
Well, sometimes it does come out of the blue.
As well,
unfortunately. Yeah. And that, I think, that there obviously hasn't been any research. People don't have lymphedema at all. They might have a bit of an achy arm, but they don't have swelling as such to worry about. But suddenly, something will trigger off and it will start swelling. And I believe that it's to do with the neck and the muscles. For whatever reason, they use the arm or they use it in a natural way. And that interference just then triggers off the muscles. They stop working and then suddenly they'll develop the lymphedema. Or they'll suddenly develop swelling in the arm where they never had it. So this is why the doctors don't understand what happens. But because I relate it to the muscles, I think that's the whole missing link with the education of lymphedema. There has never, ever been a preventative approach. What happens is they bandage it when it's big, and that's the way that they control it. It's just too late then, and that's why as soon as somebody has had cancer treatment, then I'm there, like, you need treatment to put you back together again, to make your shoulders work properly, make your feet and your shoulders stabilise you, everything back in balance.
So this should be a standard part of aftercare. You need this to get yourself back properly fit again.
Okay. Every patient should have at least 4 lymphatic pressure therapy treatments as a complete aftercare package. And the depression that goes with breast cancer and all cancers, I'm assuming, because that's the biggest problem. And then the lymphedema, they get a thing about having lymphedema. It's the worst side effect that they're so scared of. There's nowhere to turn to. It would stop all of that. They would know where to go.
Okay, so maybe I'd like to round up by saying a little bit about your organisation. What it's called, how you access it, what facilities you have now, and what you have planned.
It's called the UK Lymphology Clinics, and we have currently 2 students who are just about to be qualified in August. We have another 2 that are undergoing training, and there's myself. So we have the ability to have 6 clinics by the end of November.
Which will be spread around.
Yes, we'll have Bristol, which is quite a long way away, but we have Bristol, Crawley, Shoreham, Horsham, Orpington and Biggin Hill.
Okay, so they're mainly southeast, but you've got Bristol as
well.
And your intention is to go further afield still?
The intention is to, because it's a 3-month correspondence course, they can start, the home study can start wherever you have the home study for 3 months, and then you have 4 days attended a training, and then you have 2 months practice within your own clinic of patients. They can be frozen shoulder patients. We do recommend 1 or 2 breast cancer patients, but because the actual therapy helps a lot more than just breast cancer, because it gets the whole shoulder moving, you can use them as case studies. Mm. So, and the idea is that you can access a UK lymphology clinic within a practice. So Jane's Massage Centre will be a UK lymphology clinic. She's a registered clinic. Mm-hmm. They have to keep up their standards. They're on a clinic register, and that will be within oncologists and GPs and on our website as well, which is the theuklc.com.
Great. Well, it sounds like something essential and missing. So it's brilliant that you're stepping in to
Thank
do
you.
Something about it. We need people like you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much indeed, Yvette.
Here's an excerpt from Yvette's extensive talk on the lymph system and on breast cancer.
Now I'd like to turn to breast cancer. The reason that I'm starting my module 1 with breast cancer is because patients, I feel, have a hard deal. To be honest, if ever I needed someone, there is nowhere to go. Because I'd like to come to... I'd like to come to me. I'd like somebody to be able to go to, and the fact is it's outrageous the way they treat patients, okay? And breast cancer patients have a particularly hard time because I'm a statistic now. I'm a 1 in 2, okay? And that is scary. Well, I feel myself, I'm not a 1 in 2, I'm actually maybe a 1 in 5 because I know what happens to the breasts, I know what happens to the tissues, and I know what I can do to prevent it. Okay, now to take you to the actual breast tissue itself, I did think about wearing a bikini, but I thought that's a bit too much. So this was in the paper last week, still happening. Breast cancer surgery, my arms failed. Okay, so it's still out there, it's not actually understood even. So, getting back to, I digress, inside the breast tissue itself, the breast is actually a gland. It's not meant to be put on page 3, wear little skimpy bikinis. It's a fundamental part of our anatomy that is now causing serious concern amongst the health service and certainly amongst women of today. Now, do you remember what we were talking about, what the lymphatic system does? So when it collects at the end, it then moves through to be cleaned and filtered, like Wessex water. They have their filtering stations. Basically, lymph nodes, they have lots of afferent vessels. They collect lots of waste, like from lots of houses, and then they clean and filter it, and then they have one or two vessels that follow out. Okay, so your filtering stations are all around the breast. And then you have the areola and the fat, but behind that you have what's called ducts. Okay, so you have the nipple, the areola, and then behind that you have ducts that go to lobules. Now, when cows calf, the calves push up, okay? And so these ducts, so they allow fluid and waste, because you have to have an opening to the nipple, okay? Now, ductal carcinoma in situ is the most common cancer, okay? And these ducts lie just behind the nipple. There is an increase of Paget's disease, which is nipple cancer too. And what you actually have to remember is that the mammary glands are supposed to be like that. And as you push up, these ducts can be massaged, can be kept clean, okay? But unfortunately, what we do is we just put them in a bra and we leave them there. and we don't move them. We have underwire bras that are possibly constricting the lymph flow around the chest. We wear deodorant with toxins and poisons in them, and we expect our lymphatic system to behave normally underneath the arm. The ducts behind the nipple are representing a plant's roots. So they get twisted and they turn, and then they get left to stagnate. Now, I don't know about you, but it's pretty easy to see what I can do to keep that moving. And that is keep breastwise, I call it. I just do breastwise routine. And we do that lying down, move the breast. It keeps everything moving. You also, in the shower, come over, push the nipple up, and actually keep it moving. Because I tell you what, I do not want to be a statistic, and I certainly know that the lymphatic system does its job if I keep it clean. Now, you all brush your teeth, I'm sure, because it's not nice if you don't. Now, if you knew and you could see into the future that just by doing a little bit of a routine was a prevention, then I'm happy to do it, because the statistics far outweigh the consequences. And just a minute a day, okay? Now, the routine isn't very difficult to do. I call it breastwise. There's a little bit of education about the lymphatic system on there as well. And once you've learnt it, you've got it for life. Okay. So the prevention side is to keep the lymphatic system clean. You must keep the lymphatic system clean in order to make the body absorb, and all these toxins and waste goes through. You have 1,000 lymph nodes in the body. So each time it goes to a different lymph node, it will clean a little bit more and a little bit more. It might not get it all the first time, but it's going on to another, okay? So it's not just one lymph node that you use to clean, it's all of them. You have up to 500 in your stomach. Okay. So that's my breast cancer prevention approach, is keeping the lymphatic system clean, knowing what it's doing, keeping it massaged, keeping it moving.
So Derwin's given us an in-depth guided tour of the entire process of creating oil from linseed, after which we were treated to a delicious and healthy lunch with, of course, lashings of top quality oils. This afternoon's speaker is an author and he's a motivational coach. His name's Pete Cohen. He has supported his wife on an extraordinary journey through treatment for brain cancer with an extraordinary result. And this was largely achieved by travelling to the controversial Buzinski Clinic in the USA for treatment. Of course, I want to take this opportunity to hear about this treatment and the science behind it from someone with some real-world experience of it. It's a treatment that receives both praise and vilification in equal measures.
In the Buzinski film, the first film, it talks about one other place in the whole world that was doing research.
Yes.
And it was this...
In the Far East?
In Japan.
Yeah.
And there was a study that was done with people, I think, that had a certain type of stomach cancer, and it was a randomized trial. So the biggest challenge that Buzinski has ever faced, really, is people saying, you've never done a randomized trial. Well, randomized trials cost a fortune, and you've got to find people that are going to be in one of two groups. They don't know which group they're going to be in.
Yeah.
So he's never done that. But this hospital in Japan had. So Eric Marola, who was the gentleman who made the film, both the Buzinski films, he managed to get hold of this data from his phase two trial, get it translated into English. He then gave that to a doctor in the UK, I was almost going to say who it was, whose wife reviews for medical reviews for medical publications. No, she prepares papers for medical publications. He reviews them. So she took this data, and the Japanese hospital wanted it in The Lancet, The Lancet publish very, very few phase two trial data, so they didn't publish it. No surprise there. They then tried to get it published in a number of different places, and PLOS, I don't know what that is. I think it's an online. It's now been published. This data has been published, and the results look pretty good. But like with any data, from what I understand, because I'm not a man of science, you know, I'm a very practical person, that it's still very easy for people to look at that data and go, yes, but. You know, it's let's just talk about Baczynski for a moment. Could it be that the guy's a charlatan? Could someone make more money doing something else? I know that he's recently had to get rid of maybe half of his staff because he can't afford to pay them. I spent 7 weeks in that clinic and I was bombarded by skeptics telling me that he was a fraud, he was a charlatan, he was a blood-sucking vampire who just wanted to take the money from people. And I think what will happen is one day he will get the credit that he deserves, but he won't be alive to see it. And he's been taken to court again for the third time by the Texas Medical Board. They not only want to revoke his license, they want to revoke the other doctors in his clinic. And you know, with Hannah, no one is interested. No one said, "Wow, this is great." You know, what did he do? No one. And it's a great shame. It's such a great shame. But that's the world we live in. I there's not a day that goes by when I don't feel how lucky I am that Hannah is alive, and I feel lucky that organisations like yours exist who actually will go out of their way to help people, as you well know from your own journey of how difficult it is to get answers and find solutions. And
So statistically, where does Hannah's case sit? I mean, how many people survive in the way that she does from the disease that she had?
Well, I mean, the meantime for a grade 3 anaplastic astrocytoma is anything between 12 and 18 months. So Hannah's been alive now for 4.5 years since diagnosis. Mm. She has scans every 4 months, and you know,
she's still clear.
They can't see any. Right. And we have 3 different people look at every scan.
Right.
So
right. That's quite a testament in itself. I mean, when you get a disease which is basically not curable,
yeah,
by any other standards,
yeah,
and you actually, you know, that's, she's coming up to the 5-year, which is official cure, you know, that's an astonishing thing.
It is. I just wish more people would be open-minded. I mean, if anyone wants to see the film that I made about Hannah, it's on a website, just teamhannah.com.
We'll put a link on our side to it,
And if I can be of any help to anyone, I have been actually, and I'm more than happy to be, you know, if you come across people that have had a similar situation. And
yeah, brilliant. All right, yeah, we'll certainly point people towards your film, which I love, and great.
Thank you, Robin. Cheers.
All right, thanks for talking to us.
And now let's hear some of Pete's talk this afternoon.
So I found a few people that were alive, and this doctor's name kept coming up in Houston, Texas. His name is Dr. Stanislav Baczynski. Right? And, you know, it was very interesting to me because all of a sudden, and I must have spoken to 10 people that were still alive who'd had a brain tumor, right? So then I started thinking, okay, now I'm going to start talking to some people in the medical fraternity. And they said one of two things. They said, don't go anywhere near him. He's a charlatan. He's a quack. Or they just didn't know anything about him. So there's one lady who's friends of my mum who spent her whole professional career dealing with the anaplastic astrocytoma, which is the type of brain tumor that my wife had. And she looked at what the information that had been produced by Baczynski. And she spoke to some other people, and she said, don't go. She said, don't do it. She kept telling me. This treatment cost us $300,000. And we had to get accepted on an FDA trial, and a phase two trial. So someone in the FDA basically had to decide, by looking at her case, did we fit the attributes or the conditions? Yes, so she'd had surgery, and she'd had radiotherapy, and the tumor was coming back. So what would you do? I mean, can you imagine being in this situation that some people are telling you this and saying don't go, and some people are saying you should go? I mean, I don't know what you would do. I had to really dig deep. And personally, I've learned so much through this experience, as I'm sure many of you have who have been touched by cancer. You've learned to look at the world differently than how you looked at it before. But one of the things I still do to this day is I realize that the greatest quality, I think, of a human being is, what have you got? What have you got in here to deal with something that's difficult? Because we've all got it, right? We all say our love and kindness and respect and trust, and those things are lovely. They're beautiful. But what have you got in here to deal with something that's difficult? You know, whether it's your forefathers or my great-grandparents, or what did they have to find in themselves to deal with something that was difficult? Have you ever had to do that in your life? I mean, you probably already have, right? I mean, something's happened to you, and you didn't even know where you found the will to get out of bed because you didn't want it, you know? And I know this is maybe challenging for some people to hear, and please forgive me, I'm only sharing with you my experience, and I'm not here to tell you I'm right or I'm wrong. But remember, he said, what are you going to do when you get better? And he said, find people. I was only doing what I was told. So the day we left, the day before we left, I was in a post office, and I'd never met the woman before who specialized in the type of brain tumor. But she knew me, she'd seen pictures of me, and she came up to me and said, you cannot go. I said, what do you mean? She goes, you cannot go. I said, what, are you going to stop me? She goes, you mustn't. She'll die. I said, what? She goes, she will die. And you know what? We still will. Just because this woman had spent 30 years studying, sometimes people will defend what they know, and they won't let go what they don't know to open their eyes and realize, hey, I was talking to Denise before, right? So Denise, the back there, was a physiotherapist, lived near Dursley in Gloucestershire, and was realizing that, you know, working for the NHS wasn't great. Now, I know Denise, I'm not going to ask how old she is, because you should never ask a lady how old she is, but this was probably some time ago, and she decided that she wanted to study reflexology. And she did, and then she entered into the world of natural medicine. Now, natural medicine is just right out there. There it is. And, you know, what it is a business that started a long time ago, two different businesses. One was natural medicine, and one was looking at other things, surgeries and other weird things. And all it was one got massive investment, got really big, and the other one just got pushed to one side. Everyone knows that. That's just what happened. But many of us know that hundreds of years ago, or even today, some of us still rely on natural remedies. You know, if you're Indian, you know that turmeric is extremely powerful to the human body. If you live, well, most people know about linseed, right? I mean, nature is amazing. You cut yourself and your body tries to heal itself. So, you know, if you have cancer, is your body trying to sort itself out? Has your body got confused? These are lots of the things that I wanted to find out about. So what had Baczynski had come up with? I don't want to go into this in too much detail, but I'm happy to another time if you want me to. He discovered something. He wasn't researching cancer. He was researching what's called peptides. Peptides form amino acids in the body. So if you have a chain of peptides that don't go over 50, it's just called a chain of peptides. He discovered that people with certain conditions didn't have these peptides. So he extracted them from urine, extracted them from blood, and he started doing experiments with people. Then he synthesized it, and that was the treatment that my wife was on. I was her nurse. I gave up work. My purpose in life is to serve others. That's always been my purpose. But all of a sudden, that stopped. My purpose was to help her survive. And luckily, she is still alive, 4.5 years today. It's a shame that she couldn't come today, but she's going to do one of the very few things that she really, really enjoys doing, which is the ballet. She'd go to the ballet on her own. But one of her best friends, who also had a very, very rare form of cancer, they've gone to the ballet together. When we were in Houston, Texas, this treatment cost us everything we had. We had to raise money. Someone gave us £60,000, by the way. Someone who we've never even met. Humanity is amazing, right? That there are good people out in the world. So when we were in Houston, Texas, my wife was having this treatment. I was her nurse. I had to take her blood. This treatment had to go in through a Hickman line, which many people who've had chemotherapy, it's a similar sort of process. So I became her nurse. I don't even like blood. I hate needles. My God, was this a steep learning curve for me. And I was frightened. She was frightened. You can imagine, right? Because she just didn't want to die. And there is a real point to me telling you this story. I'm not telling you this story because I just want to tell it. I want there to be a legacy from what I'm saying, that maybe you'll take something away that might make a difference to, I don't know, someone else's life. Because that's what Yes to Life is all about. It's making people feel that you're there and you care, and, you know, rather than a society now where all we do is just kind of look at our phones. I was on the tube the other day, and it was hilarious because the lights went off and you just saw all the lights on people's phones. You see, this is how the world has changed. And, you know, we're so, you know, people are trying to find a cure for cancer, but I don't know whether we'll ever find a cure, but when it comes to preventing, I think there's a lot of things that we can do. And I know that there's probably a lot of confusion in here as to what should I do, right? Has anyone ever had that before? What should I be doing? What should I be eating? Should I eat meat? Should I not eat meat? You know, should I juice or should I not juice? Should I exercise? Should I not exercise? And it leads to so much confusion, and that's why a lot of oncologists will say to you, don't look for alternative treatments. And I'll tell you another reason why we were so lucky, because this trial that we were on, we had to find a doctor in the UK that would oversee her when she came back, right? And because the treatment was nice guideline approved, we were so lucky. Dr. Lawrence Buckman, who was head of the GP Association. He did it, he signed it, whereas I knew other people who'd gone to see Baczynski and doctors wouldn't touch it. I'm not touching that, because I'm a part of this group. And we don't do that, because when you start to do things which other people don't do, oh, what are you doing that for? And then we start to ostracize those people, because we're all in a happy, clappy group, aren't we? Rather than realizing, hang on, Baczynski has been doing this work for years. And he's been doing it for so long. Would he still be doing it if he was a blood-sucking vampire?
And now just to finish off, I'm going to go around and talk to one or two of the audience to see what they made of today.
I had a very stimulating conversation about the lymphatic system and the importance of it.
What actually brought you here today?
At this stage, I would say it's general interest. Too many people I know dying of cancer. My mother, my aunt, my uncle. I've got a friend who's 80 who has got prostate cancer. And if you look at the statistics, well, I don't know when it hits me. So I'm trying to be proactive.
Informative, fun, friendly, fantastic food, a great location, health building, what could be better, you know, really, really, it just flowed and it's...
You're also in the company of like-minded people,
yes.
Which is so comforting,
yes.
When everyone is against you. Even my church friends, they say I should go and get NHS treatment.
They don't at this end because they don't understand.
Well, exactly.
I thought it was really good. I loved Pete's talk because that really hit home in the way that certain things that you want to do when you've had cancer, you want to look at, you know, the positive or the negative sides, and it's a choice, isn't it? And you choose positive. And like with me, I did the Mongol rally.
Yeah.
If I hadn't done that, I wouldn't have got a son-in-law.
Right. Well, that's
so that's
pretty good.
That's pretty good reason,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Great.
You know, I mean, it's one of those life-affirming decisions that you make and you go and do, and then it just changes your life.
I found it quite therapeutic and cathartic to actually be able to speak about things that you felt or that you must have had to hold in, that you can actually share with other people and find different viewpoints. And then on the medical side, with the homeopathic and the sort of alternative, it's really good to sort of find out new ideas. And there's like the mushrooms I didn't know about, and other things I did, but I've learned slightly more in depth. So now I kind of want to follow that a little further myself. So yeah, and that's so I found it really interesting and quite motivating.
So hi again, Derwin. I've just been talking to people about their experience today. It seems like it went down pretty dang well. What do you think?
I think that's right. And weren't we actually lucky with the day?
Yeah.
And we got people sitting outside
scorching.
Here and on tables and sitting on the grass and
yeah.
just in, and we can't get them all you know, going, they just want to sit here for the rest of the rest of the time, I think. So really, really, I think tremendous.
Yeah, brilliant. All right. Anyway, so a big thank you to you for supporting the installation this way. Brilliant.
I hope that gave you a little flavour of a Yes to Life event and that you found our speakers as interesting as the attendees clearly did. As usual, there will be links to information mentioned in the show posted on the Yes to Life website. Just go to yestolife.org.uk, that's yestolife.org.uk, and click the link to radio in the left-hand sidebar. Additional material from people who are featured in the show appears in UK Health Radio's own Health Triangle magazine. Do check that out. If you'd like to contact us about the show, anything you've heard, or any ideas for future programmes, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at radio@yestolife.org.uk. And I do hope you'll be able to join me again next week. Many thanks for listening. Goodbye.